Would you introduce yourselves, please?
We're dry cleaning. I'm Nick.
I'm Florence.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Lewis.
Amazing. You look like them. You sound like them. But you're way too chipper to be this bad. South London post-punk created a new genre, The Tonight Show, Pitchfork approved. Disembodied lyrics. We're done. That's it. There's nothing to talk about anymore because we've covered everything. All from South London?
No. Grew up in South London.
Yeah. So this is London.
Two of us are.
I happen to know that the UK has a lot of different places. Morrissey's talked about that. There's the north. There's the south. You can get on a train. There are different places. So where did everybody grow up?
Well, yeah, Lewis and Flo are from South London,
right?
And Tom is from a place really close to South London, just a bit further out in a county. You're from Kent.
Yes. Okay.
I think I grew up the furthest away from there in rural Norfolk, which is, you know, kind of like farming country.
Was that up north or is that
east?
You know the map of the UK, and there's like a lump.
Yes.
It's the
lump. He grew up in the lump.
Yeah, right on the northern tip of the lump. It's still quite far away, and places, they develop their own little scenes, you know. But they can feel, and this is like pre-internet or like dawn of the internet kind of days, those scenes can feel very insular, you know. You might have, I grew up near a town called Norwich, and then I played in like a lot of kind of heavy bands when I was younger, and there would be... you know, I don't know, like 25 bands that were big on that scene, but they would never play out of Norwich.
Well, weirdly, I felt the first maybe five dry cleaning shows were within like a mile radius. There's all like in Dalston,
yeah.
for no real reason.
This is East London.
Yeah, which is East London, which is where none of us live. Yeah. All our shows were in one area where none of us lived.
Yeah. Well, but was it becoming Shoreditch yet? Was it becoming cool yet?
It's kind of post being cool.
Way past being cool.
Oh, you mean it went cool and then it went uncool?
Yeah.
It's kind of like hyper gentrification because it happens like so quickly.
Yes.
And we've all been in London. You guys have been here in London forever. But like me and Tom have probably been in London for about 20 years. And even in that time, we've seen it happen to places like the dramatic changes.
It's incredible, right?
And we're a part of it. You know, you can't exclude yourself from it.
I know that you went to the Royal College of Art, mm-hmm. and got formal training. How about
Tom
everybody?
Too. How we, about it's where we met?
Okay, So you went too. What did you study?
We both studied visual communication.
We met studying music at Goldsmiths.
I would say there are advantages to having people in the band with formal training.
Definitely.
Particularly when you're in the studio and stuff like that. For instance, communicating musical ideas to other people mm-hmm. that aren't in the band is almost impossible if you don't have some musical training. Like, I have to do it with my mouth, basically. Mm-hmm. I have to hum it or something, which is not useless. But
I would like to add to what Tom's saying. I'd like to think we'd learn a lot from each other coming from different backgrounds, and that's nice of you to say. I would say, I don't know about you, Lewis, but I would feel I learned so much from these guys that I did not even come close to learning at university, you know.
But that's what, for me personally, that's what's so much fun about watching you. What were your full-time jobs?
I had a few.
tell me the
We actually just did a podcast called Full Time Jobs.
Yeah.
Did you? I mean, I want to know the ones that drove you to this.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose when I did lots of different things, when we started the band, what was I doing at that time? I was doing some lecturing in universities, teaching drawing.
Wow.
In lots of different places as like a visiting lecturer. Traveling around to different universities, and I was also working at a news desk sourcing photographs for online articles.
And then you decided you know, I want to stand on stage. And people go,
no.
What is she saying?
No, no. I said I wouldn't mind going once a month to Lewis's parents' house to stand around in a garage and pretend to be the lead singer of a band. That's what I decided to do.
And then the irony is, the irony is you're still pretending.
Yeah, very much so.
Right? Mm. So that works out well. I want to get this over with. Well, does she do this out of her head? Is it beat poetry? Mm. Is it real life? Is it taken from other things? And I'm going to save you a lot of this. Because
thank you.
I know what you're doing. You're in your head and you're kind of thinking, this is complicated. What makes it joyous for you? Because I know, now having met you, that when you're on stage, you're just so into it that people are like, wow, I wonder what she's like. What's she like in real life?
This is actually a very nice question. And it goes back to what you said earlier about what would you like people to ask you. Nobody ever asks me that. Nobody ever says, what makes it joyous for you? What do you enjoy about it? Nobody ever asks me that. I don't know why, because I think it explains maybe some of what occasionally people don't get about it. I find it like it's very cathartic. It's a good opportunity to exorcise unresolved feelings, often negative ones, or not necessarily negative but complicated ones where I'm not sure where to put those feelings in everyday life. Occasional confusion, listlessness, anger, or hurt a lot of the time. Like I'm often hurt by things and realize later, you know, as we all do, and then you're not quite sure who to tell or how to say it or, yeah, where to put it. And the stage is a really good place for that. Also, I guess I enjoy something about the relationship with a crowd in the one-sidedness of it. I find really calming. Sometimes the cut and thrust of kind of human interaction stresses me often, and I enjoy space to talk and not be interrupted.
Do you care one way or another whether people get it or not?
No, not really, because that's also part of it. I think if everybody got it immediately, that's not really what I'm trying to do. It's not an exercise in like efficient communication, you know what I mean? So I don't, it's wonderful when people do, but I enjoy what that means as opposed to feeling that it's been a success. I enjoy if somebody gets it straight away, I feel that I must have some affinity with that person, or we have something in common, or we feel some of the same things, or that they're just quite an open person, and that's always nice to meet a person like that. But if people don't get it, I don't consider it to be a failure at all. In some ways feels like an achievement.
That was very well put. That's it, yeah.
Was there a moment that you turned to each other, and especially with the early music, you know, some of it being re-released, was there a moment that you turned to each other and said, wait a minute, we've got something here?
We had a sit down meeting, as in it's once the label got involved and started like offering, and we had a meeting to decide if we wanted to do the band or not, because we knew it would change kind of like our lives. We all had kind of careers at the time and full-time jobs.
Wow.
And it was very 50-50. It wasn't like a clear yes.
I'd say it was more that other people thought that it would be popular.
Yeah, agreed.
It was more like there was a booking agent. There was kind of Keith, right? Who runs Bad Vibrations, who kind of put us on a show over a Christmas, and then he told our booking agent, Matt Cooper, about us, and then he told our manager about us. So that kind of...
But you had that, you see...
We didn't have that at the start.
Right. I mean, but
that came before we had the realization that this would go anywhere.
Yeah.
But also, is it? I think it's fair to say, if we're talking about like considering that it was an experiment that had in some way worked, like playing together, I would say that was probably. I mean, I definitely felt that palpably at our first rehearsal, like when we all played together for the first time, it did immediately seem like, oh, this isn't terrible. Mm. You know what I mean? Which is quite something, because things are terrible, you know?
Yes, it is.
And I definitely thought that straight away, having not necessarily known, like, if it would be any good or just embarrassing and awful.
Yeah, that's my interpretation of your question as well. I think what you guys are talking about is having kind of like affirmation from some other place. But in terms of the four of us, I think I just enjoyed doing it. And that was, I've never really had like any more than that. I think my enjoyment of the music comes from when we're doing it in that moment, when it's bad. You know, because we do stuff that's bad, you know, you never hear it. But like...
I can't imagine. Really? wait. So you're telling me you're human.
It's true.
Sad to admit it. But
wow.
When you're doing something and it's just the four of you there and you feel like it's really working, that's probably the most gratifying moment for me.
But in many ways, this is a very, very UK-centric band. You're talking about the Royal Family. Talking about BBC reporting. You're bringing in a lot of things. And yet, it's the music that makes it exponentially popular everywhere else. Would you agree with that? That it becomes transformative simply because people start tapping their feet and going, I have no idea what she's talking about. But I do know that I'm smiling, or I'm intrigued, or I'm scared, or I'm confused. But boy, you can dance to it.
I think the combination is makes it. It's more than the sum of its parts. The words and the music together, because they're often pulling in different directions, and on you know purposefully undercutting each other, or kind of tempering a too earnest emotion or something like that. You know what I mean? It's like. If the lyrics are very sincere, often the music kind of isn't, which kind of puts it in a non-place emotionally. It's in between a lot of different things. It's not often one thing. And that's, either on their own doesn't do that at all. So it's, I guess, yeah, I always think of them as they can't be separated. If that makes sense.
And yet you have used the word accessible, that you feel that this music's accessible. Tell me about that, because that's a very interesting word for this band to use, because you know pop is accessible.
If you're writing a piece of music, if it sticks in your head, then it's like that's a hook. I mean, when you listen to things like Metallica, that's pop to me, because it's got really great choruses and it sticks in your head. So I think it's a flexible term, if you know what I mean. Like, if it hooks you, it's what it, you know. There's some pop music that doesn't hook me, that a lot of people would say hooks them. Like, very, very popular pop music doesn't touch me at all. And then other things really do. So it's that's when your personal sensibility comes into things.
Hooks. I'm listening to you play against her doing what she does. And the reason it works is because those melodies are sticking in my head.
I think the hardest thing actually is to get a group of people together that give each other the space to do that as well. Yes. And also to indulge the slightly more, you know, the slightly more weird things you're into. And as we sort of move forward as a band, that space gets bigger and bigger for each other, and you start to put more of the weird things you like in. Mm-hmm. So,
but
on the
still.
Second record, there was a lot of like more ambient things.
Yes,
and something like Hot Penny Day, where you sort of bring in a bit of sort of weirdo metal.
What's the filter for a dry cleaning song? How do you know that it's a song for this band?
That's what kind of being in a band is, in a way. It's like its own little tiny world. If you're going to do it democratically like us, then everyone is constantly drawing and redrawing their lines and deciding where they're going to compromise, where they're going to let things slide, where they're going to put their foot down. And I think what ultimately comes out of that, I have no idea what it's going to be, because I don't know where these guys are always going to draw their line or where it's going to end up. But I feel like the product that comes out of that at the end, because of that situation of how it's made, you don't really know what it's going to be. But I know that it's like a product of four people making those compromises and interacting in the way that only we interact.
I think you also realize over time that time is the biggest filter, because if something you really cared about when you wrote it, mm-hmm. a year later you forgot it. You forgot what it was you cared about so much. So and then someone else has a new idea for it, so you just forget that. And you just pick up a whole new thing, and the songs are always evolving. Like we're playing the two EPs at the moment, and it's like there's tons of stuff that I'm doing differently.
That is definitely a big part of it. We jam a lot together, all four of us, including Florence doing vocals at the same time. And we'll leave a rehearsal being like, that's the single. Mm. And then you'll never listen to it again. And it'd be a jam which you totally ignored earlier on in the studio. And you'd be like, that's a song. Yeah. So it comes down to listening and time, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's something we used to talk about at college a lot when we were teaching students. Like, doing something and judging it at the same time is a bad idea.
My favorite part of your show is at the very beginning, when whoever the sound engineer is trying to get the mix right. And yet by design, you don't want your vocals to be way above these guys. Mm-hmm. You want them to be in exactly a certain place. And then someone will say to me, so wait a minute, am I supposed to hear what she's saying? Or am I not? Tell me about that.
I never minded that much if people could hear the words or not necessarily.
It takes a couple of songs.
Yeah.
Without fail. Yeah. No matter how good a sound check you do.
Yeah.
It takes does. A couple
it's
of a, songs. Let's
just, it's a really difficult job to being our sound engineer. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It looks and by the way, it's a, it's a compliment. But I also know that in some ways it's also on the records. It's by design.
Mm.
It's a bad proposition to have a loud rock band.
Isn't it though?
With a quiet singer.
What a terrible idea.
But it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. It really doesn't.
What a really stupid idea.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
It's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, I think that's...
what is wrong with you?
That's a fair point.
I think that's also partly... That never occurred to me... Or at least nobody talked. We never talked about that when we first started playing together. It only started happening because we played together a long time without playing a show, or at least not a long time, right. But you know, like a year or more without playing a show. And then suddenly we were playing a show, and people were saying like, "Oh, can you have to do that louder?" I was like, "Huh?" Like I was really shocked.
Yeah, but I can't see that. So in the bubble.
Yeah, no,
that's just not gonna fly.
It's not what it is. Yeah, yeah. It a big part of the. Of the point is the I guess the calm. I'm wanting to say calmness, but it's not really calmness. It's control. The sense of control that there is in the vocal. I never liked the idea of. I'm more interested in the idea of almost something coming across as passive, rather than. Super angry or anything like that. It changes all the time.
It's a delicate balance.
Yeah.
It's a very delicate balance.
It changes all the time my feelings about it. But at the same time, I think it works as a live proposition, even if you can't necessarily make out every word, because...
Entirely.
I kind of also like the image of a perhaps slightly fragile person speaking at the same time as very loud noise. I think that's an interesting image. And I, not necessarily at times fragile, at times powerful, or powerful in their fragility, you know, speaking over something that's louder, that they can't be heard over. I think that's an interesting image for a band.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And you get to pick anything you want in between.